You know, I'm sure I'm not the only person who thinks this, but games at the Trop are just kind of bleh. You know, like they're just not very exciting. It's one of the few places where it just feels like the energy just gets like sucked right out of the stadium, like right out of both teams. The pace just gets ground down to nothing. It's like the slowest games I've ever seen. It's funny, I've actually been to the Trop a couple of times back in 2008. I have a lot of family that lives in Florida, so we had gone to Tampa for a couple different events, and we went to a Bolts game, which by the way, gets absolutely packed, especially these days. But the Trop, I don't know. Like, even, and that was when the Rays were pretty good. In 08, they went to the World Series that year. But still, just not a lot of excitement to be had at Tropicana Field. Today was much the same. A 3-2 ho-hum loss for the Jays. And as Ben said, they lose the series in St. Petersburg. I'm Joe Wiley. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text me as well, 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. It's always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. A quick bit of housekeeping before we chat about Y-Rod and Kirk and so on. Corey in Regina and Lori here in Toronto were our two winners from last week. If you recall, we did some giveaways. Lori took the Barrios Roberto Clemente bobblehead, and Corey took the pink Jays Carabana hat for his daughter. So we still have the Bobichet bobblehead and the yellow Jays Carabana hat as well to give away. Next weekend is Fan Appreciation Weekend, the final series of the regular season at the Rogers Center. So we'll see if we can just wrangle up some more stuff to give away next weekend as well. But anyways, today's game, 3-2 Jays loss. I'm not sure we learned a ton about anyone in this game, Jays or Rays. Actually, it's a loss that guarantees a few things. One, that the Jays will not be a 500 team this year. They have 82 losses now on the season with 7 games remaining, and they have been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. Now, I actually think the mathematically being eliminated technically happened overnight after yesterday's loss, and then with some results that went on around Major League Baseball, instead of as a result of like this game in particular. But the Twins were idle in the third wildcard spot today. They were there was a rainout, I believe, in Boston at Fenway Park. But entering play today, Jays were already 8 games back of the Twins with 8 to play. Again, entering this game, and then they lose 3-2 today, so they're now 8.5 games back with 7 to play. So that put an end to that. I'm not sure. Maybe like we really thought otherwise collectively. Maybe there was that brief moment post trade deadline when it was a fleeting passing thought through our brains. But yeah, that's unfortunately that is put to bed officially right now. Let's talk a little bit about Yariel Rodriguez. And 4 innings pitched, 4 hits, 3 runs, all of which were earned, 3 walks, which were not great, 3 strikeouts. He threw 81 pitches, 49 strikes. Just from a stuff perspective, the fastball did have some life to it early on. We've seen before when Y-Rod struggles that sometimes the velo on the fastball doesn't quite get up to where we've seen it at different times. But today it was living, 94, 95 miles an hour, perhaps on average. It got up to about 96, 97 miles an hour at points as well, although he was a little wilder with those throws. It was interesting. We did see a fair amount of sliders today. Chris LaRue pointed this out during the game, but the slider early on did not have a lot of vertical break or vertical depth to it, perhaps. It did move a fair amount horizontally instead. He was just leaving it over the plate a decent amount. Josh Lowe, for example, just missing on one of them with a pair of runners aboard. And I mean, if he had gotten all of that, that would have been a no doubt like 3-run home run, because again, it was left right over the middle. Jose Siri's missing on one as well. And it's funny because despite getting struck out a few pitches later in that AB, the slider that struck out Siri, this was in the second inning, that slider did actually have a ton of downward movement, downward action. So it almost seemed like he was figuring it out on the fly with Kirk today. Ultimately, a so-so start for Y-Rod. Gives up 3 earned runs over just 4 innings of work. He walks 3 batters, and he puts a batter on to lead off an inning 3 times. So basically immediately putting pressure on himself because of a somewhat stark inability to consistently locate the zone. He was filling up the strike zone early on, it felt, but as the outing went on, it almost seemed like that deteriorated a little bit. at least for me, I'm not so sure that my opinion largely changed today of Wire Op. I'm not sure it was going to. I'll be completely honest, because I'm not sure what we could have learned. And I've said this about a lot of different guys this year, but I'm not sure what we could have learned overall in, let's say, two more starts from Yariel Rodriguez, unless he was super hyper efficient at striking out tons of guys and he suddenly located all of his pitches and he's finding the strike zone. Like if that was happening really consistently, even over two starts, I think you'd say, okay, this is a super small sample size, but at least give you some hope. But again, today we did not get that. I'm not sure we found out anything particularly negative about him either. I don't think we saw anything from Yariel Rodriguez that we didn't necessarily already know, right? We didn't take a step towards him being the fifth starter, for example. The truth is, we're probably not going to find out a whole hell of a lot towards that question, at least until the offseason, I would say, when we see how the Jays answer that fifth starter question. But I mean, if you're trying to answer that question now, at the very least, I think if you're trying to make a decision right this second, I think we're all probably in agreement that he is not the fifth starter. There's a text here from Ian in Ridgeville. Why Rod needs to start next season in AAA if Toronto wants to compete next year. And I mean, look, he doesn't necessarily have to start the year in AAA. He could at least start the year in the bullpen, at the very least, right? I mean, if Yariel Rodriguez is in the bullpen, he's an expensive bullpen piece. That is true. And he's under contract for four more years after this one. But Yariel Rodriguez, I don't think he needs to necessarily be a Bison out of camp next season for it to be a success. It's just, if you're trying to make that decision right this second, it probably means he is not in the starting rotation, at least to start. But, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, it's kind of funny how the conversation between Rodriguez and Francis has essentially completely flipped in the last, what, month or so. I like to use the demarcation point of Canada Day, just because on Canada Day, if you recall, Yariel Rodriguez got the start against, I want to say it was the Astros, and pitched extremely well at the Rogers Center. And, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say been all downhill since then, but he's had a bit of more of a topsy-turvy season since the beginning of July, whereas Bowden Francis, once he came off the IL, went back into the rotation, he has been the guy who has effectively taken no-hitters into the ninth inning, not once, but twice. So the perception of both these guys have almost completely flip-flopped, because we were having the conversation at the beginning of July, we would have said, yeah, Yariel Rodriguez is in the rotation next year, and Bowden Francis is not. And now it's the perception is, I think, rightly so, because of both of their play has flipped. So I'll be interested to see if we do get one more start from Yariel. We'll see what they do. I mean, there's one more off day. Let's see, after the Red Sox series, that's the off day on the Thursday. And then there's a possibility that Yariel starts on maybe the Saturday or Sunday, depending on what they want to do. But he just hit, when you combine his, so four innings today, you combine his minor league innings and his major league innings today, or this year, pardon me. He had those four innings from today. He gets just over 100 innings pitched, which is more than he has ever pitched before. And certainly he has never pitched in Major League Baseball before. So it's the most he's ever pitched at the major league level. So I'm curious how that will look for him next season when it comes to him being stretched out. Does he go a little more? I mean, today, 81 pitches, but only four innings. So not very efficient at all, I would say. So, if you're making the decision right this second, again, I'm saying he's probably in the bullpen, not in with the Bisons, but almost certainly not in the starting rotation. That's for sure. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. Let's go to Bob in Toronto. Bob, what's up? What's on your mind today?
Hi, show. First of all, I love your comment about the energy being sucked out of the place down there at Tropicana. It has got to be the most miserable place to play baseball. Every team that goes in there, I believe, has difficulty. And I think probably even the Tampa Bay team itself from time to time. I want to say that, first of all, it just illustrates today the fact that the Blue Jays could score only two runs over the two games, how much Vladdy needs support around him. There are the guy gets three hits today, and we can't do much with it at all. I think that's an indicator of what Kevin Barker has been saying. You need a thumper or two around him and then see the real results. The other thing I wanted to mention is about the system of the Tampa Bay Rays. whatever we think of them, and they frustrate those of us who are Blue Jay fans very much from losing these games the way we do seem to them all the time. But they obviously have a good management system and particularly a good scouting system. You look at the players that they either bring in from other teams or bring up from the minors, and those relievers coming in, is there anybody below 96, 97, 98? I mean, this is something that we don't seem to have learned from a management perspective, particularly Ross Atkins, in developing a scouting system that can yield players like that. Take a look at the players that we've brought up, particularly pitchers. Hardly find one who isn't injured, who has really come to the fore, such as Manoah, but now he's out, that have really made it at the major league level. I think that speaks volumes of what needs to be done, not only on the field, but in the front office in the off season.
Hey, Bob, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for joining me here on Jays Talk. I will say, I think I have heard, and I think this is thanks to Blake, actually, Blake Murphy on Jays Talk Plus. Blake has had Eric Neander, who's the president of baseball operations for the Rays, and then he's had other Rays guests, baseball guests, who have talked about like the development of the farm system in Tampa, which just always seems to just produce the next star that's going to irritate the AL East for the next like 10 to 15 years. Just at the ready, right? I like to joke that the Rays can just sprinkle some pixie dust on the five guys next to the Trop, and the guy will go out there and probably go 2-for-4 with two runs or something, right? Like that's the common joke for the Rays scouting system. But you know, I do think that one criticism, I think, at least from a pitching perspective, is that it almost seems like because the Rays are so, I mean, we talk about like khakis and analytics and how teams have embraced that in the last, you know, I mean, they've always kind of embraced it to a certain extent, but how most teams these days have embraced this kind of like Moneyball-ish approach. And the Rays are like the worst, right? Like if, what's the word Barker uses? The cackification of Major League Baseball. It kind of starts in Tampa Bay, I would say. But man, they essentially go out there and just ride their pitchers until their arms fall off, right? Like you could essentially make a whole starting rotation out of what the Rays have on IL right now. The Dodgers too, and the Dodgers and the Rays have some real through lines, as we know, with when it comes to their front office and the scouting department. So like I do think it's not all you know, sunshine and rainbows for the Rays, but I do think if you're talking about the Blue Jays and you're talking about if you could swap their front office for the Rays front office, I think 99% of people would do that. Frankly, I think most teams in Major League Baseball would do that. I've always kind of wondered why a team, especially because we know the Rays do not operate with a particularly large payroll. I have always wondered why other teams don't necessarily just like richer teams don't just go and just buy their whole scouting department and their general manager and just make that their new, like just clean house. A new president comes in and just takes everyone and brings them to their a new team. I've always kind of wondered why they don't just do that. You would think that happens more frequently. I did want to talk a little bit about Vladdy though. And Vladdy, as Bob mentioned, three hits for Vladdy today. So he actually came into this game. These were his stats coming into today's ball game: 188 hits, 30 home runs, 99 RBI. So he had three hits to bring him up to 191 on the season. Didn't have a home run or a ribby today, so he's stuck on 30 and 99. So we'll put that aside for now. For comparison's sake, in 2021, Vladdy had 188 hits total that year. So with the first hit he had, I think it was in the first inning, he has a new career high in hits, right? The first of his three hits. I was actually curious to see where this ranked all time in a single season for the Jays, because we knew Bo was like pretty high up there from a couple of years ago. So Vladdy is now actually tied with Bo in his 2021 season and Alex Rios in 2007 for the 10th most hits in a single season by a Jays batter. So they're all tied for 10th with 191. It's pretty impressive. Seven games to go after today. So nine more hits before he hits 200. I think he gets there. I think he gets to 200. I mean, if he gets to 200 hits, that would actually tie him with the 1993 season of John Olerud, who had 200 hits exactly, which is actually good for fifth all time in a single season in Blue Jays history. That's pretty remarkable. Only five Blue Jays, like in terms of single seasons, have ever gotten to that 200 hit plateau. Vernon Wells, 2003, at 215. Tony Fernandez in 1986 at 213. Paul Molitor in 1993 at 211. Shannon Stewart in 01, 202, and Olerud in 93 had 200. The rest of the top 10 is just below 200. So George Bell 198, Delgado, 196, Aaron Hill, 195, Alomar in 1993, 192, and then here we are with Bo Rios and Vladdy. So it's, first of all, congratulations to Vladdy on hitting a new career high in hits, and he's not done yet. I mean, yeah, I guess he could go on like a seven-game hitless streak, as I guess, but it seems pretty unlikely based on everything we've seen from Vladdy in the last couple of years. But that's pretty cool. I got to say, I genuinely think he gets there. That's very impressive stuff. He could be just the, I guess, sixth if he's tied for fifth. He'd be the sixth Blue Jay in history to get to 200 hits in a single season. So, hey, I think it happens. I think if he's going to get to 215 in seven games, like, probably not. But 9 hits in 7 games? Ah, it seems pretty doable. 416-870-0590, 888-666-0591, star 590 on your cell, 590-590, name and location. We will go to the people's text line in a sec. Let's chat with another Bob. Bob in Nova Scotia. Bob, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? I just want to talk about the Tampa's bullpen again, just kind of like what the other Bob was talking about. It seems like, you know, talking about, you know, Rodriguez, you said it, and Hunter Biggie, these guys were kind of cast-offs on other teams. Tampa either trades for them or gets them off waiver claim, and they seem to be able to develop these guys into really, really good pitchers. And when Toronto seems to do it, they can't seem to do it. The bullpen's terrible. It seems like, I don't know what it is, the underground city or something in Tampa, they seem to be able to develop these guys into really good pitchers. And, you know, going forward next year, not only does Toronto have to deal with the Yankees and Baltimore, now it looks like they have to deal with Tampa's bullpen, which is just going to be another problem. So going forward, it should be interesting.
Yeah, hey, Bob, I appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us. Yeah, it's true. As we talk about the Rays a little bit more, I mean, they shed it. They shed at the deadline this year because they sold a lot of the deadline, right? They sold Isak Paredes. They sold Zach Eflin. They had traded, I guess, Tyler Glasnow before the season started. They sold one of their relievers, Jason Adam. They sold Ahmed Rosario. They sold Randy Arozarena, who had been on the team for quite some time. They sold about $40 million worth of players to restock the farm system. And I mean, they, even in the Tyler Glasnow trade, which happened before the season when they traded Glasnow to the Dodgers and they got Ryan Pepiot. And I mean, even Pepiot kind of looked like someone who's going to be a thorn in the side again of the rest of the AL East for years and years and years. And I mean, that's just like the Rays model, right? Like they do it to the, like the nth degree, like most, you know, like most players or most teams rather do kind of, to a certain extent, embrace the value added propositions of trying to, again, to use the term moneyball, to like moneyball their way to success. And, you know, I mean, I did kind of wonder after Wander Franco, who's probably never going to play baseball ever again. And for good reason, after Franco got the big deal and then that clearly bit the Rays in the butt, I kind of wonder if this is just what they're going to do like forever, as long as Neander and company are at the helm here in Tampa. But, you know, to your point, Bob, about the AL East, I mean, you know, we talk a lot about how this team has said, and, you know, you kind of take with what Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro say with a grain of salt, because you kind of have to, right? Like, it's not the most transparent of front offices. They're pretty opaque as far as front office. I mean, no front office is going to tell you exactly what they're doing, but even with that in mind, I would say Atkins and Shapiro are pretty opaque. So knowing that, you take everything they say with a grain of salt. So I think you try and do that as much as humanly possible. But, I mean, they say they want to compete next year. Here are all the areas of need next year. Let's just, for a second, put aside the bullpen, because, you know, if you're talking about the bullpen for 2025, it's Cabrera, who is probably, you feel pretty good about Cabrera being your number one lefty specialist going into 2025. Chad Green, because of contract, I know he's had a tough end of the season, but he's going to be in the bullpen next year, even if he shouldn't necessarily be the closer. But he will be in the bullpen in relatively high leverage. And then let's just say, for the sake of argument, Swanson and Romano are on the team next year. They're both making a decent amount of cash. They could each be non-tendered and then re-signed for a lower rate. We'll see what happens with them. But let's just say, for the sake of this discussion, they're in the bullpen. That's still a lot of spots for the Blue Jays to fill. So they have all of those spots to fill. They probably have to figure out, at the very least, what is going on with the third base position, whether that means getting someone to do it internally, whether that's Vladdy or Barger / Clement, or are they signing a big-time free agent? And if they do that, then first base needs an upgrade. But let's say you leave Vladdy at first. You need to figure out the third base situation. You need to figure out the left field situation. You need to figure out the DH situation. You need to sign a backup catcher. And we'll talk about Kirk, who had a pretty good game today. So we'll talk about Alejandro Kirk. But still, you need a 1B catcher. You still need a fifth starter. I mean, when you're talking about competing in the AL East, in 2025, I'm not saying it's impossible, because the third wild card has essentially guaranteed that it will almost always be possible if you're just like, all right, right? Like, if the, I've made the assertion before that if the Blue Jays had had even just a normal bullpen, not even a good bullpen, and frankly, even if it was just slightly below average, we're probably talking about the Blue Jays being contending for the third wild card alongside the Mariners and the Tigers, for example, right? So the third wild card is effectively guaranteed you can compete. Whether that's the same thing as being World Series contenders, I don't know. Those are not the two same things, I would argue. But it's just, man, that's a lot to get done if you want to compete with a very young Orioles team. They have scuffled a little bit, but they're still going to make the playoffs. A Yankees team that are, I don't know, probably re-signing Juan Soto. So even if they run it back exactly the same, it's still a team that won 90-plus games this season. And then the Red Sox, who are probably better than we thought they'd be this year. And then like everyone's talking about, the Rays. So there's a lot to get done in the offseason. You can get a lot of it done, but will you get all of it done? I don't know. 590-590, name and location. That's the text line. Let's go to the people's text line. Again, standard data and messaging rates do apply. Let's see. See a text here from Mike in Toronto. Vladdy, you have to pay. How else can you charge for admission with a straight face? You go from almost signing the 50-50 unicorn, Shohei Ohtani, of course, to losing the MVP he was supposed to play next to. And then there was another one here from, I think this is from Lib in Scarborough. I don't understand people saying Vladdy is not worth the money. No one blinked an eye when Scotty Barnes was given a contract worth $50 million a year after just 3 years in the league. That's from Lib. And so some Vladdy comments, certainly, as we talk about some fun things he did today. It's true. I mean, I would be willing to bet that if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is not a Blue Jay certainly he will be next year because he's in a contract for next year. But if he's not a Blue Jay after that, I mean, gosh, like I know some people, especially when we do Jays talk, have some issues with some things he does. He's shushing to the crowd when he hits a home run, or, you know, the little leg kick between second and third, or, yeah, you know, kind of chatting with people when he's at first base, or the ice bucket stuff. Like, I know there's a lot of like not baseball things he does that people take exception with. I don't really care. I've said this before. I don't really care about that stuff. For me, it's all about the on-field production. But for Vladdy, even if, you know, he doesn't produce in the big moments, for example, I'm not sure that's necessarily true. But, you know, if you're talking about money, I mean, he is, you go down to the ballpark, we go down there pretty often. I'm down there most weekends when the team's at home. I mean, he is beloved by the fans. He really is, especially young fans. He is like their hero. And I can't imagine what the vibe would be if he has a season like this again next year, and then he does not get re-signed and walks at free agency. And like, I wouldn't really blame him if he did, but man, they have got to get that deal done. I keep saying my bold prediction is that he will sign the extension by the end of like Halloween, let's say, but I don't know. Like, I mean, you want to see some traction on it. Maybe traction will be had once the season is over in just over a week, but boy, that's got to get done. On the Scotty Barnes thing, I think he's being paid around $44, $45 million a year, but I think the other part of it too, is kind of a tough comparison, right? I'd make comparisons to the Raptors a lot because, you know, the Raptors won a World Series, won the Larry O'B a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic. They made a big trade to get it done. They have not really gotten it done in consistent ways since then. And of course, the pandemic kind of messed with that season where arguably they could have won another championship. They were probably one of the better teams, if not the best team in the NBA. But since then, you're like making decisions about how to gauge people, like how to gauge, I mean, now they're not on the team anymore, but how to gauge Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet are these stars that can carry you. And those are the kind of comparisons we were having with Vladdy and Bo these last couple of years, until Vladdy essentially made that, I think, a moot conversation this season. But it's funny because I think the only difference I'll say, just to wrap up on this point before we hit a break, I think the only difference is that a single player can have an outsized effect in basketball versus the kind of effect they can have in baseball. Like, unless they're doing what Shohei Ohtani did the other night, to 6-for-6 and 10 RBI or whatever it was every single night, I'm going to say that most players are probably not. And this is the criticism we levied at the Angels for years, right? The Angels had Trout and Ohtani and they didn't make the playoffs once, I think, in that span. So it's just, you know, I think it's easier, I think, to make the case for a basketball player because there are only five guys on the court for each team at any time. And those guys do have the ability to make insane impacts on a single game, but less so with baseball, as we know. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Standard messaging and data rates do apply. Shoot me some more text there. I see a whole bunch. We'll get to those on the other side. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll take a quick break, go back to the phones, back to the text line, chat about Alejandro Kirk a little bit. as well on the other side. You're listening to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I feel like if Kirky hits a triple, you should win the game automatically. You know, that should be a new rule for MLB to listen to. But, you know, fitting place here at the Trop, you know. Didn't have spent scoring from first on a Kirky triple on my bingo card. But, you know, nice that we got the ball for him. And, you know, the stars were aligned.
That is John Schneider chatting to the media about Alejandro Kirk, who had his first career triple, an RBI triple for Alejandro Kirk. I got to say, I was a little afraid because of the way, I believe it was Josh Lowe, pulled up in the field. I kind of was afraid they would give him, like, he kind of seemed to crumple almost to the field and didn't make, kind of let it bounce past him. I was wondering if they might not, like, screw Kirk a little and give the guy, like, a double plus an error or something like that. But, hey, it was a triple as far as I'm aware, unless they've changed it in the last little while. But that is not enough, unfortunately. Despite it scoring a run, the Blue Jays do lose today 3-2. They lose the series in St. Petersburg, Florida, to the Tampa Bay Rays. The rubber match, or pardon me, the series finale goes tomorrow. It's not a rubber match because they lost both games to start. But the series finale goes tomorrow at Tropicana Field, our favorite stadium. You're listening to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you for about a little over 10 minutes. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It is always open. Let's before we go to the text line, let's chat a little bit about Kirk. Because Kirk, I thought, after Vladdy getting to a new career high in hits today, I would say the next most fun part of today's game, in a game where there, I don't know, not a lot of fun storylines when you lose 3-2 and scratch out two runs in two games. So Kirk's probably the next most interesting thing to talk about today. And first of all, great game for him defensively, which is something I think we've become used to. Brandon Lau caught stealing at second base. Kirk throws him out, and then the strike him out, throw him out. A double play in the bottom of the sixth inning with Kirk picking off Aranda at third, terrific throw from Kirk. Like, he is just so good defensively. You add on his pitch framing ability, he is one of the better defensive catchers across Major League Baseball. And, you know, the ball blocking ability when pitches are kind of bouncing around near the plate out there, he is very, very good defensively. Elite, I would argue, defensively. Now, offensively, of course, that is the question mark. We have really never seen Kirk recapture the form that propelled him to the 2022 All-Star game as the starter for the American League when it comes to catchers. And coming into today's game, these are his stat lines, right? He had an OPS of 660, batting average of 247, 5 home runs, 49 RBI. Not ideal. He did have the big offensive moment, as you heard Schneider discussing, the first triple of his career. It's probably like an inside-the-park home run if it's like a slightly faster guy, which is kind of funny. But overall, definitely a good day for Kirk. Overall as well, he's an interesting guy to try and gauge because we've talked about this a little bit, but since Danny Jansen got traded on July 27th, so right before, if you guys remember, Jano got traded just before the deadline, Kirk's stats are not terrible, right? So since Jano is no longer a Blue Jay, an OPS for Kirk of 744, an average of 281, he has 3 home runs and 25 RBI in 41 games played. So more than half of his season-long offensive production have come since Danny Jansen had been dealt to the Red Sox. And if Kirk can be an even average, I would argue, offensive player alongside being an elite defensive catcher, I think you're okay with Kirk as your 1A catcher in 2025. Of course, the other part of this conversation, of any of these conversations, is the money conversation. Because, you know, I mean, we live in a world where is Kirk even catching 100 games next season? Probably not. And that's if you're baking in him being 100% healthy. And I mean, few people are, especially when you get down towards the end of the season. So, you know, what's the number are you baking in for Kirk in terms of catching? And if that's the case, how much money do you need to allocate to your 1B catcher? So if you look at some of the money things for Kirk, he went into his first arbiter this season, 2024. He avoided arbitration. He's being paid $2.8 million. He'll probably get paid, I'm going to roughly guesstimate, around $4 million in 2025. So how much are you realistically spending on a 1B catcher if you are aiming to, as Barker says, buy two free agent thumpers? So if you're saying, let's say, $20 million on one thumper, and let's say $25 million on another thumper. We're talking like AAV here, right? So that's $45 million spread over two guys. I'm just spitballing numbers here. Over two guys next season, and then you're giving Vladdy a raise in some fashion. Like you're giving Vladdy a raise from $20 million to $25 million, either via arbitration. He's making 19.9 now. So even if you don't get him the new deal before the arbitration hearings and so on, he is going to get probably, I'm guessing, $25 million, which I think would be a record for arbitration, frankly, for first baseman. But he's going to get a fair amount of money either way. If he gets a new deal, I'm sure they're going to pay him a little bit more to wipe out next year's deal. Or we'll see if that include if he does sign a new deal, where that deal starts. But either way, I mean, you're giving Vladdy a raise in some way, shape, or form, be it $5 or $10 million. So how much should you really be spending on the 1B catcher? And I was curious to see what like the numbers look like for a lot of these guys right now. And I mean, the truth is, Kirk is the 18th highest paid catcher in Major League Baseball right now. Now, of course, that's a bit misleading just because, you know, go down the list a little bit. William Contreras, Francisco Alvarez, Adley Rutschman, Gabriel Moreno, Logan Ohapi. These guys all making around $760,000. Can you imagine if it was million? $760,000 because they're still really young. They're on their pre-arb deals. So they're kind of like, they skewed a little bit. But guys who have actually made money, I mean, Kyle Higashioka might be available as a free agent. He's played relatively well since being dealt from the Yankees to the Padres in the Juan Soto deal. Kyle Higashioka making $2.18 million. He's probably played himself into a better contract. Yasmani Grandal is making $2.5 million. He's going to make around that much. I mean, even Jose Trevino, who's looked at as another really good defensive catcher with the Yankees, he's making $2.73 million, right? So, I mean, you look above that, I mean, Jano's making $5.2 million. Victor Caratini's making $6 million. Christian Vasquez making $10 million. James McCann's making $10.15 million. So it's just like, I'm not sure you can really be spending oodles of money on the backup catcher position next year. If that's the case, then I think you're going to be seeing a lot of Alejandro Kirk. Like, whether you like it or not, you're going to be seeing a lot of Kirk because he is relatively cost effective at a relatively young age. But I mean, you know, will the body hold up next year? Will he be the guy he has been since Jano has gotten traded for most of the 2025 season? That's a question mark. Let's go to the text line 590-590, name and location. Again, standard data and messaging rates may apply. So there's no name on this one. Mentioning something from the TV broadcast. I will admit I didn't hear what Dan and Buck were talking about today because obviously we're here at Baseball Control listening to the radio broadcast. But the text says, lost some respect for Dan and Buck today, who are making a big deal out of the White Sox losing. Guess what? The Blue Jays aren't that much better. Please don't compare your record to them. They're both bad teams. Okay, look. That is fair that both teams are bad and that both teams are going to miss the playoffs. Having said that, the White Sox do exist in a league of their own this year. Like, I don't think it's fair to knock Dan and Buck for talking about the White Sox in a different sense. The White Sox have lost, I haven't seen if they played yet today, but they have lost 118 games this season. They have won 36 ball games all year. Even the next worst team by losses, okay? The next worst team in all of Major League Baseball are the Marlins. The Marlins have lost 98 games. So that means the Marlins have, who are the second worst team in Major League Baseball by losses, have lost 20 fewer games than the Chicago White Sox. I'm not sure there is a compare. I'm genuinely unsure if there's a comparison with the White Sox to literally any other team in Major League Baseball, which is kind of unfortunate. I do genuinely feel bad for White Sox fans. Less so for White Sox management, but kind of for the players to a certain extent as well. But boy, that is a situation that is incomparable, I think, to anyone else across Major League Baseball this season. I just wanted to put that out there. Let's see. There's a text here from Shane in Brockville. Shane, always nice hearing from you. He says, last caller is right. Coaching staff, front office is horrible at evaluating, developing talent, period. I mean, I think they're not the worst I think I've ever seen, but I've said this a million times. I do think it is true that after so many years without results and the farm system being relatively barren, and many of you guys have brought this up before, either via call or via text about how, you know, when Shapiro came in, he kind of like scolded Alex Anthopoulos for, you know, kind of trading the farm for the chances in 2015 and 2016. And then they kind of like, oh, we have to rebuild the farm system now. You know, I think that is a valid criticism to point out because it's not as though the farm system has been a great strength for the Blue Jays. Now, of course, the deadline, they did make some moves to recoup some value, but does that really mean we're looking at this whole situation all that differently? I'm going to say probably not, right? So, you know, this change is still warranted, I think, in the off season. But I mean, there's going to be a whole hell of a lot of change come this next off season, whether we like it or not. Although I'm willing to bet most Blue Jays fans are very much looking forward to that. Jen in Toronto on the text line again, 590-590, name and location. Jen says, and it's always nice to hear from you, Jen. Jen says, what is the plan for Springer? He is horrid as leadoff. Who cares about this year? Year's over. But what about 2025? He seems to ground out to short or to third often. I'll be curious to see what they do with Springer going forward, right? Because I think to a certain extent, it matters who is on the team when it comes to free agent thumpers, to borrow Barker's term once again. It also matters what Bo is doing next year as well. I mean, you got to think the fractured middle finger is not something that's going to keep him out of the spring. So if he is completely healthy between now and then he's going to be available for a full, you know, a normal quote unquote off season after the finger heals in a month or so. So let's say Bo is a part of this conversation and he's not on another team. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Bo bat leadoff, frankly. I mean, if you're batting Bo leadoff and you're batting Springer lower in the order, the problem is I think you really do need these thumpers, so to speak, so you can have Springer and I would say Kirk be batting like fifth or sixth, let's say, right? Like in theory, you could have Bo bat leadoff, you could have Vladdy bat second, and then you could have your two thumpers, whoever they are, bat 3-4, and then bat Springer and Kirk in whatever order you want, 5-6. Obviously depends on the pitcher and so on, but I wouldn't hate that honestly as a solution. I don't know if the Jays are actually going to do that or not, if only because how often have we seen them go out there and actually take Springer out of the leadoff spot? And there is something to be said for leaving players in spots where they're most comfortable vis-a-vis Vladdy batting third most of the season this year. But I don't know. Like if you're going to be getting two more thumpers to be playing and giving you big time ABs and 30 plus home runs and 100 RBI or something close to it every year, then I don't know. You better be at least considering batting George Springer a little lower. That's all I'll say. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family owned Crown Risk Control Centers in Etobicoke and Streetsville, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. Appreciate all the calls. Appreciate the texts. 590-590, name and location. For Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Show Ali. That does it for us. I am out of here. I am back tomorrow to put a bow on the series at the Trop. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.